The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only Poor Kicking Decisions podcast. I am Joel Gaston with John Fraser, as usual, as we are back from a week hiatus following the Riders' second bye week of the year. To be determined whether we will do that again after their final bye week of the year or not. It'll all depend kind of on what's going on around the team in the league at that point. So,
how many Ram Chryslers and Jeeps we're selling, and how busy I am at Dodge City, the big store on 8th Street.
Mm-hmm. That too, of course.
Yes. Is that the earliest I've ever got away a promo?
No, I'm sure you've basically done it off the top before.
That's fair. That's
You can't, like, the only time I think you could have possibly done it sooner is if, like, that was the intro to the episode when I was away. I listened to you didn't, and the other ones in the past I've listened to you didn't. So
no, that's fair. No, I have I've never come off the top with plugging my own thing, and I feel like it'll be more aggressive now.
Crazy,
because Jock's gonna be mad. We're talking about my thing again. but I feel like I'm gonna be even more aggressive with this one because I actually can give you that free undercoat now.
Mm. Yes. Everyone is very concerned about that, of course. No one's really that concerned about the Saskatchewan Roughriders right now.
No.
We will talk about their dominating win over the Hamilton Ticats, the ongoing struggles of kicker Brett Lowther, and news we learned last week that the Riders will be playing their preseason game next season, their home one at least, in Saskatoon.
And love it!
How all of that came about thanks mostly to the Toronto Argonauts.
Sorry, I must warn you, even though I've been out west for 20 years, whenever harvest starts,
yes,
allergies just boom. It's like my Ontario
Jenny Jenny's lived here her whole life and harvest still destroys her. So
oh, see, it's getting better as the years go on, but like I feel like I can tell when the harvest is going to be good because, like, this is definitely above what it normally is for allergy levels.
Yes, because that was not a covering up cough of any kind. That was a totally real one.
It started as a covering up one, and then some phlegm got involved, and it kind of went off the rails quickly.
Things kind of went off the rails quickly for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last week. We don't always talk football off the top of this fine program, if you want to call it that. But we would be remiss if we did not discuss what happened at the end of that Winnipeg Blue Bombers Ottawa Red Blacks game. First of all, a masterpiece of chaos. Like,
yes.
I am not mad at any of it. There's no question about that. But if you want to get into pure football discussion, we will never pass up the opportunity for a head coach. I don't know if this is fully being a coward, but it's pretty close. And it was definitely not anywhere near close to a good decision by Mike O'Shea.
No.
Whatever it was in the final couple of minutes of the game, they trot Sergio on for a 57-yard field goal attempt up by 7. Which, okay, if you needed that to win the game, fine. And we all, to be clear, and I know Mike O'Shea said he believes in Sergio, You both, everyone here listening to this podcast knows we believe in Sergio Castillo.
Absolutely, we do.
So I believe he can make many 57-yard field goals. The problem is you could have a kicker who has a 100% career field goal percentage. Odds are if you keep trotting him out plus 55, he's going to miss one eventually.
Well, and that's exactly it. Yeah. Like, there are no bigger believers in the world, I believe, outside of probably his own family in Sergio Castillo than us. So
I would hope he believes in himself more than we do, at least, yes.
Okay, there's Sergio's own belief in himself, his family, then the two of us.
And Mike O'Shea might actually be above us because we would not have sent Sergio out for that kick. Not because we didn't think he was going to make it. It just didn't make any sense in terms of trying to win that football game in the moment. And I can appreciate Mike O'Shea coming out and saying, we were trying to be aggressive and win the game. It's like, okay, I appreciate that thought. But if you're going to be aggressive and try and win the game, leave the offense on the field and go for a first down because you only needed like a yard and a half.
If some of you, if the seven of you, I know the seven of you watch every single game, but context, Bombers have just given up a touchdown. Winnipeg's basically at the center stripe, needing a yard on third and one. Send out Sergio to try to steal the game.
The play before that, it was second and three. And right. They brought out Chris Streveler to sneak.
Right.
So and they got about half
again.
Of it. Yeah. Or leave him out there. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Like, I've always said, and maybe if I was a coach, this would be my downfall, that if you can't get a yard in the CFL when it matters, when you're given a yard, maybe you should find new employment. I'm sure there's a insurance salesman back in your hometown that would love to have you on his staff, right? If you can't get a yard when it matters in the CFL, you really need to give your head a shake, right? So,
yep.
And this is just so typical Mike O'Shea. We saw it last year in the Grey Cup where, you know, Zach was playing like dog shit and then his hand was falling off and he went back to him wearing a glove for the first time ever with a ring finger that he wasn't able to feel. And we saw the disastrous results of that. This is just Mike O'Shea is so in love with his own guys and believes in them. Like, I wish I believed in myself the way that Mike O'Shea believes in his veteran players. And you see it time and time again. And it's I mean, Winnipeg ends up winning it again because another, you know, decently length Sergio field goal, which made me happy. But again, it's like it's these weird boneheaded coaching decisions that veteran coaches can't seem to get away when they have veteran guys. And I know I'm not sitting here going, well, Mike O'Shea should lose his job. Like,
no,
come on, I'm not coming out here and saying that. No, but
even some of the best coaches of all time make stupid mistakes from time to time.
Like Pete Carroll. Look at everything Pete Carroll's done in the NFL and in the NCAA, and he didn't give it to Marshawn Lynch on the goal line, right? So, yeah, it was a boneheaded decision, but at the end of the day, it led to so much chaos because who doesn't love a game-tying missed field goal return? Like, and to me, even being a fellow Bombers fan, watching the faces of pain in the stadium, because I'm very much in my 5-year grace period era. I'm enjoying that this is probably the twilight of this dominant era of Blue Bomber football that I've never had before in my entire damn life. I'm accepting it's the twilight, so I can laugh at these moments when they go to the... And kudos to whoever was working in-stadium camera that night, because, like, they found the most dejected, heartbroken people. Like, just top-notch work.
Yep.
But in the end, Winnipeg wins, the world is all right, and again, the opposite of the Fraser curse worked, because I remember texting you, they're gonna blow it, and they didn't blow it.
They almost blew it, and, I mean, also thanks in part to Bob Dice deciding that he didn't need to try to pick up a first down when they got the ball back.
Yeah, after
getting the interception. Everyone's almost forgotten about the interception that Zach Kolaris threw.
I did, yes.
On their Bombers'
Zach
next possession.
And then Crum threw one. It was like, oh, they just kind of wiped each other out. And of course, Zach throwing an interception in a big moment, that's never happened. But like, I feel like the last 2 minutes, and I almost want to bring out my inner Don Cherry and be like, hey, kids, young coaches, that's not how you do it. You just keep your stick on the ice. That'd be, go for it. Don't be dumb.
Yeah. And it was like even a scenario where I could have understood a punt even, which is like not a thing I say all that often.
Never.
And like my priority of doing it would have been go for it on offense, punt. and then field goal. But I mean, it is what it is, I suppose. But the thing that really sticks out to me in that whole, this whole shebang, and like, you would think Mike O'Shea of all people would maybe know a little better in this regard at this point. Would, how do you feel if you're on offense or defense for the Bombers in that situation? Because he's basically told both units, I don't trust you. Like, I don't trust you to pick up a yard and a half. And two, I don't trust you defense to stop Dustin Crum from scoring like a 60-yard touchdown drive.
Maybe,
like,
maybe
like, if the Red Blacks needed a field goal, I could totally understand it. You do not want to give them the ball there. But they still needed a touchdown, and Dustin Crum was their quarterback. You could have stopped that. You could have stopped that drive easily. Like, come on.
Oh, God, no, you're bang on that. I think anybody, like, you know, you and I have been sending a lot of memes back and forth lately of, do you, this was what I had for the open. Now I remember it.
How could you?
Behind the curtain, we were going to bring up Mike O'Shea, but we were both like, what's the open? And I'm like, I can't remember. I'm too busy at my new job. I actually have real work to do now. And the open was going to be the discussion on whether or not you could get a yard as a running back in professional football, because I believe I could.
I know you've thought that you believe you could.
What, 1 yard?
One yard.
1 yard, I formation running behind a fullback.
I really don't think I could do it. I really don't. I do not trust myself enough to know where to go. Like, I'm probably running right into someone's backhide and just going right down, and then that's that. Because there was the other one that was like, could you get 8 yards over the course of like an entire NFL game?
No.
And I was just like, no. I'm like, even if my very first carry is positive, the first contact is going to kill me.
Oh, 100%.
So I am never, 100%. I would have to get all 8 yards on that play and then never touch the ball again.
See, I have so much faith in an NFL offensive line, even a CFL offensive line.
What if they put you with the Cincinnati Bengals, though? You saw what they did to Joe Burrow in a preseason game.
Oh! All I know is my brain has been full of fantasy draft prep this week, and I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm taking Ja'Marr Chase after seeing that O-line. Like, gah, I don't like that at all. But I honestly think I could do it. Now, again, I'm talking, like, designed play for me, okay? Like, again, we're talking, like, Chris Strevler's the quarterback, and I'm running behind a French-Canadian fullback, because we all know that's the best kind of fullback. And I would go full bulldozer when I hit the line, just like when he came back for the touchdown record in King of the Hill.
I still don't think I could, but, hey, maybe you could. I don't know. I don't believe I could.
I am sneaky fast for a fat guy. And I've always said it. I've got a way lower center of gravity than you. Mm-hmm. I'm sneaky fast for a fat guy. And I feel like behind a professional O-line on a play designed for me, I could get a yard. It might take 3 tries, but I could get a yard. That one, like, could I get 8.5 yards in a game? Absolutely not. Could I get 1 yard on a designed I formation run? 2 French-Canadian fullbacks, Chris Strevler? Absolutely.
That's a lot of ifs. That's a lot of ifs. And you still and you still have to, like, actually receive the handoff clean, by the way. So.
Oh, I can do that. That's easy.
When the pressure and the lights and, like, 50,000 people are watching you do it.
I'm great at hand stuff. Okay, I shouldn't laugh at my own jokes, but that one was pretty good.
Someone asked to, I guess.
And then the thought of Grammy laughing to hand stuff because she all supports me all the time is now giving me. So.
I mean, all we're really trying to do this episode is figure out as many ways that we can irritate Jacques Cartier as possible, I guess, at this point. Like, is that that's just what we're going all in at this point. Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I'm glad, Kay. I honestly felt like, because I had this moment that I'm like, hell, that's a great open. I want this to be the open. And I was so pissed off when push came to shove, and I couldn't remember it, but I'm glad we got there in a real roundabout way. Mike O'Shea.
It almost sounded like we meant to get there, because, like, it kind of flowed into it, but we totally did not, to be
100%.
Clear.
No,
to be
no,
here clear, we had no intention of talking about the could you gain a yard in a professional football game.
No, no.
None. But that the conversation did not come up at all before we started recording.
So maybe if I was on the Blue Bombers roster, Mike O'Shea would have put me in there for that crucial play, and I never would have gotten
it. You're not a veteran. You wouldn't have done it.
What if I'd played for him for 10 years and then blown my hands off?
Maybe then. Maybe.
That's fair.
The Riders are playing their best football in over 10 years as they are looking at this point like a wagon. Lots of season to go left still, but we will talk about their win over the Hamilton Ticats, preseason game in Saskatoon, and a whole bunch more. But as always, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
You know, I was going to do a liver detox with my guys weekend coming up this weekend for my fantasy football draft. We do it in person, have a golf tournament attached. We watch a really bad movie on the Thursday night, but... then I walked in the liquor store to stock up, and I saw that Fruit Loop Sour is back.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect summer beer. And I guess at 4.5%, it's a bit of a liver detox. But then, because, you know, I can't podcast sober, I also had to put LB and lemon and ice in a glass, too. So, but Fruit Loop Sour, it is back. Probably my favorite easy drinking summer beer. I'm definitely glad it's seasonal because I could not picture myself drinking one of these in the winter.
Sure.
I don't know. I like the citrusy.
You call yourself a functioning alcoholic. Come on.
Well, no, I switched to whiskey. And it's whiskey and like IPAs. I don't know. Like the sours just say like, it's 31 degrees, and I had to rush to Winners to buy golf shirts today because I've sweated through two different long sleeve shirts in the past 2 days. You know why? Because I'm the hardest working sales manager in town to get you the deal you want.
Ugh. Gross. Gross.
I feel icky with that one, Gas. Gross. I'm sorry. I apologize, dude.
You owe someone undercoating for that one.
I certainly do. Listen, legitimately, if one of the seven of you ever come in, you'll get free undercoating and a great deal.
Hmm. Is there an asterisk that we're looking for there, or what? Like, just in case.
No, I was like, how can I legitimately tell that I would appreciate anybody that listens coming in to buy a truck or car or van or whatever from us without sounding extra skeezy? And I'm like, there's no fucking way. I'm a new car manager. I have to accept this is my role now.
Yeah, I mean, at least you're not like at Larry's used lot on the corner somewhere. So it could always be worse.
One day it might happen, so we'll see.
The problem is, yeah, once you're in charge, there's very much a responsibility to the overall everyone doing well. So
yes, that's
you're not just responsible for yourself anymore.
I know it's kind of terrifying. It's kind of like it's the first time. It's like when you become a parent for the first time, and you're like, oh shit, I'm responsible for you. I walk into this big ass office and see like 11 talented salespeople and go, huh, I'm your boss now. Oh God.
Yeah. For me, the, as always, what go to in the summer, especially when it's stupidly hot, like it was today, the Nokomis Long Lake Lager, just in my opinion, yeah. The best beer that tastes like beer in Saskatchewan.
Ooh, I would give that to Champol from Malty.
I don't mind Champol, but it's just a little too light for me. Long Lake Lager's got a little bit more of a bite that I like.
That's fair. But yeah, I would definitely, I would put, both are great.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that time we bought a case of Long Lake Lager and didn't touch it at the men's because we were already drunk?
I had a few.
Oh, that's right. You did. The rest
I did
of
have a few.
Old.
I bought it, and so I had a few. I also that's remember fair. Bringing a case of Sports, and you drank like 3/4 of it in about 2 hours at Pricey's.
My metabolism was high. I did some sweeping.
Yeah, and you had to go pee every 20 minutes.
I did. I have the tiniest bladder in competitive club curling.
That may be true.
Mm-hmm.
What is also true right now is that the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are a very good football team.
Oh my goodness, yes.
You may remember just a few weeks ago, flashback, when we said that we weren't sure if the Riders were actually very good because they kind of had some ups and downs in games and things were getting dicey at times, and they probably should have lost a few of those games that they won. Well, I guess they listened and decided that they needed to prove us wrong. And if there's one thing we do on this podcast very often is admit when we are wrong. And I think at this point in time, it is very safe to say that the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are not only a very good football team, they are easily the best team in the CFL right now. A lot of season left to go. A lot can change, as we all know. But at this point, with 8 wins already, not even at Labor Day, not mathematically, but essentially they've clinched a playoff spot. So that's certainly some weight off some shoulders, I'm sure. But it's impossible to ignore what they've done the last 2 weeks. Obviously, in Montreal, there's a lot of caveats there. You know, they weren't with Davis Alexander, missing some other guys on defense. They're missing all the receivers. This week against Hamilton, less so. I know their schedule's been kind of hellacious lately between going to BC, to Edmonton, and back to Hamilton all within an 11-day span. But, you know, I know the Ticats won't use that as an excuse, and they did have an opportunity to bury the Riders early with a couple of cowardly field goals that should have been dodged down.
Speaking of cowardly, of cowardly.
Yeah, those ones were definitely cowardly. Those ones definitely were, and they left a team that was a little slow out the gate, at least on offense, off the hook. And unsurprisingly, the Riders came back and dominated the rest of the game because of those decisions.
Yes, I don't understand in a coach's mentality, especially in a sport like football, where the crowd, and you knew that crowd was going to be a part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and yes, sold out. And a one point I do want to make.
Yes.
Sold out. Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock kickoff, which I know is early for a number of people. I remember even some people in the press box are like, oh, this is early. I'm like, I don't know. My daughter's been up since 7:30. This is great.
Personally,
this is great. But the atmosphere around the game was great. Jamie and I on the Green Zone said before the game that they had sold a record number of those family packs, which is like four tickets, unreal. Two kids, two adults for $100. Yeah. And you could notice, you could tell, because I know there are adults out there who don't like being around children in public for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, you hear them hear about them at restaurants, on airplanes, at events, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm sorry, a gaggle of children at a sporting event brings an atmosphere, and it was noticeable on Saturday afternoon at Mosaic Stadium.
Interesting. And as it always seems to be, I mean, you always watch when, like, the Scotties, the Briar, us being curling nerds, they bring in those.
It's a little different when it's like the morning draw and it's like literally all just kids there.
Right.
That I can understand being maybe a little annoyed at. But when there's a good mix of adults and children, it's a great atmosphere.
So bang on to the Riders. That family pack, I dare say, is probably the best bang for your buck in damn near Canadian sports.
It's a pretty good one, yeah.
Like $100 for the whole family to go to the game, like that's incredible. So kudos to the Riders, great atmosphere, and you know, coming into a sold out barn, you'd think you'd want to quiet that crowd, right? Like I get if you're at home, you're in Hamilton, you know, getting your feet wet with a couple field goals, I can kind of get it there, but you've got a chance to in what people are considering Grey Cup preview to silence that crowd.
Yeah.
And you decide to chicken out and kick two field goals. Yeah. Like those
at very least, the third and goal from the four-yard line, they should
never kick there. Never kick the
other kick. It was at least third down and like two or something at like the 10 or the 13. So it wasn't quite as egregious, but still like
still never kick.
You probably could have gone there. It should have at least been 10-0.
Your worst outcome, and this is what I don't understand when coaches kick from in that close. Your worst outcome is the Riders getting the ball super deep in their own territory.
At a point where Trevor Harris was throwing near interceptions on every second pass.
Right. He didn't look good. He came out a little slow. And so your worst case is you give the Riders the ball at the 3 and the 10.
Yeah. Like I understand like a lot of people like to say take the points, but take the points is not as simple as it is in the NFL when you have the opportunity to then kick off and hopefully make it a little more difficult field position wise for your opponents. In theory, they just kick it through the end zone there. But regardless, in theory, you have the opportunity to keep them back. In the CFL, the team that has given up the points, so in this case, the Riders, has the option to either A, have the team kick off, or B, take the ball at their own 40-yard line. And newsflash, until the final 3 minutes and you have to kick off, nobody has opts for the kickoff after a field goal.
No.
So you were giving up 36 yards. 36 yards of field position for only 3 points. It's just not worth it.
We know we love Derek Taylor, play-by-play boy, voice of the Bombers, friend of the program. This is when I wish that DT was not so busy with the Bombers that he could have his like statistical breakdowns he used to post all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the man is busy being the voice of, you know, the voice of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, that he doesn't have the time to post those breakdowns like he used to, the notes. I would love to see the statistical breakdown of what you should do in that spot, because I can almost guarantee you it says to go for it. And
probably, yeah.
It's funny that you're watching, you know, normally it's a CFL that leads in innovation and things like that, but like in the NFL, I bet you there, maybe not from the 10 in the NFL, because you got to have the 10 and then
yeah,
the 7.
It's a 20. Because you got to go with the back of the end zone for the kick, right? So
I guarantee you almost every team is going for that touchdown on fourth and goal from the 3-yard line now.
Probably.
And we used to
pretty darn near
the NFL.
Close. I mean, and right. Like to be fair, there are strategical situations where it's fine. Like if there's a minute left in the game and you're up 7 and you're making it a 2-possession game,
100%.
Fine. Like there is no black or white. There is no like 100% always, but generally speaking, yes.
But to me, it's 100 in that situation. Early in the game, the Rider offense doesn't look great. You're the road team. You know, you just punch him in the mouth. And I'm starting to think that Scott Milanovic is like falling into greatness, right? Like the man tried to bench Bo Levi Mitchell last year.
Yeah, he did.
And Bo Levi Mitchell comes up and he's great. And, you know, he's making coaching decisions like this, like not going for it twice. I wonder, it's like, obviously the guy can coach, but is he what he comes as advertised? So it was, I think that's when they read, and this is not to not give the Riders their flowers.
No, not at all.
All
we're saying is, like, the Riders, to their credit, rebounded, took advantage of the situation, et cetera.
Right.
The Hamilton Ticats had every opportunity to put them away early and end this game, and they didn't do it.
And especially a team like the Riders, that we were wrong, we are here to say it, are head and shoulders the best. Like, to me, every team in the league has, you can see a flaw.
Yep.
Right? You can see flaws with every other contending team in the league. You know, Calgary, Winnipeg, BC, Hamilton, Montreal. The Riders, outside of Lowther, and you said it in Good, Bad, Dumb, outside of Lowther, is there really anything? Like, it must be getting hard to write the bad some games.
It is.
I'm sure,
it's becoming difficult. There's no question about it. And we've talked a lot on this program about how being good is bad for business, and that's
it's kind of where
I'm at this point. But it's okay. It's been a while, needless to say, that we've been able to talk about a team that's been like this good. We've had a few good teams for the Riders over the last number of years, but not necessarily like truly the elite team in the league. So it is interesting and different to watch, because we need to see how it's going to play out. And the sort of one question I have around them as a whole right now is, we know the CFL is kind of a peak late kind of league.
Yes.
So my only concern would be, are they peaking too early? Which is, you know, obviously there's nothing you can do about that now, and you can't really risk, you know, trying to push that down the line in case you just never actually get it going. So just every win matters, rack up the wins as much as you can, and then just let the chips fall as they may come playoff time. But yeah, that is sort of like the only concern I have right now about this team. Big picture is, have they peaked too early? And we don't know. Well, then we'll never know, frankly. So
I will declare that if they sweep Labor Day and Banjo Bowl.
I'm not going to say they're going to do it. Like we talked about after the last bye week, that 5-game stretch against all these really good teams.
Yes.
I think they're basically one win away from it being like a good stretch of those 5 games.
Right.
And so they only need to win one of these three, but I don't think it's off the table that they could in theory win all three. And we have not said that about a stretch of games that includes the Banjo Bowl in quite some time.
No.
I'm not saying they're going to win all three. I could see them losing this week against Calgary, just because Calgary's good too, and there's a lot going on going to Calgary. They probably win Labor Day, and then, hey, the Bombers are kind of in a weird spot right now, but come Banjo Bowl, records and stuff don't matter, right? So
Sergio's going to go 7-for-7 for 21 points, right? We all know it's going to happen. The one that intrigues me the most right now is Calgary, because
they are probably their biggest competition, because it seems whatever the best in the East has to throw at the Riders right now just does not faze them.
No, not at all. But Calgary seems to be like, we've talked about football like puzzle pieces, right? Like, certain teams always seem to be certain teams. We've seen it with Winnipeg and Saskatchewan for the past decade almost, right?
Well, I mean, even look at what BC's done to Edmonton compared to, like, as bad as Edmonton's been, they've lost only really badly to the BC Lions for whatever
reason. Yes, it's just bizarre that Edmonton is in every other game, right? So football is like a puzzle piece, and to me, this game in Calgary is going to be really fascinating.
Yes.
Right? I think this, to me, is the one that if, like, yeah, they are obviously right now as we stand, 9 games in, the best team in the CFL. You can't make an argument either way, but I think Calgary, if they beat the Riders for a second time this season, especially with the weirdness away, right? You have no excuses. You've got
Far as we know, we don't know.
Right. I mean, you can always.
There could be a smoke delay again. Who knows?
there could be the second Subway lettuce game. Who knows? Right. Yep. So it's this to me is the test because you kind of know what Labor Day and Banjo Bowl are going to be. Mm-hmm. But to me, if you go into Calgary and come out with a decisive win, because this team is still undefeated on the road, then we can anoint them no matter what happens Labor Day Banjo Bowl.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it will say a lot about them for sure, like going into Calgary. And I think going into Winnipeg will still be a test for them because that has been a house of horrors for them over the last, I don't know, God knows how long, number of years. Pretty much the entire since Mike O'Shea became good era. That's just been
basically since we've had this podcast era.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. That's maybe even before that. That's just the way it's been. So that'll be interesting. And one thing that they do have to sort of keep an eye on through those games, as we alluded to earlier, is the play of kicker Brett Lowther.
Yes. 67%.
Yeah, 66.7% to be precise. It's not good. Like, this is, like, historic bad. Like, this is, like, good kicker in, like, the 1940s. Good.
Back when they saw this new kicking motion called it the sidewinder, back when guys had, like, shaved off the boot of their, like, basically made hammers out of their cleats.
Yeah. And it's a tough situation because, well, for one, we're all fairly confident that the team's not really going to do anything about it. Corey Mace continues to say as much. They did as much last year. So I don't anticipate this is going to change. I mean, I hope his play changes. I hope for his sake he gets better. But from a team's perspective, I don't imagine they're going to do much about it. So, you know, they've kind of strapped their hopes and dreams to this guy now. And if you're the Riders, you just got to hope he pays you back, because if it comes down to a West Final or a Grey Cup and it's lost because Brett Lowther missed a kick, that's going to sting. That is going to sting for a lot of people. It's not like it always would, losing those scenarios always sucks. There's no question about it for a fan base. But if you lost in the one way that you've said and everyone knows you've been bad at all year, oof.
You are literally talking to a Vikings fan right now, Gas.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I have watched teams over and over again lose with really good kickers making makeable kicks, right? And there ain't no, like, Sergio ain't running out in his luchadore mask here for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. No.
And then, like John Hodge said on the Three Down Nation podcast, like, it is the one position in football you could literally, yes, there's some nuances with the hold and the snap, et cetera, but it is the one position of football, really, you can fly someone in, like, the day before a game and put them out there on the field and see what happens. Like, there is 100%. No, like, a lot of other sports, hockey, baseball, basketball, like, the guy gets traded and he can play, like, the next day. In football, not so much. In every other position, because there's so much nuance and you have so much to learn and this and that and the other thing, except at kickers. So there isn't really a reason to not just bring someone in and see what happens, at least in practice or something, but I don't imagine they're going to do it. And, like, I understand it from a certain perspective.
Being loyal to your guys.
There is a very fine balance here, because it is clear that Brett Lowther is very liked in that locker room. He's been a captain of this team for a number of years. It's clear that everyone likes him. So you kind of have to try and strike that balance of, you know, trying to get to clear his head and push him a little bit and try to get him to be better without upsetting the balance of the room. And I know that sounds weird to say about a kicker, but that is clearly the situation in this team. So I understand why they don't really want to go down that road, but at a certain point, they might just have to. And like, it might be next season. Like, honestly, I would not be surprised if after this, Brett Lowther just decides, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to retire. Make this easier for all of you.
See, well, and then add him to the special teams coaching staff or ambassador or whatever. He's been proven. I mean, his numbers are terrible now.
It's not like last year where he was kind of okay for a bit and then had that one really bad blow up game. Like, this is the second really bad blow up game of the year.
The
wind at Mosaic Stadium was bad on Saturday, but I think that you can maybe only blame like one miss to that, not three.
No, and the fact that, again, 9-team league, you've got Sean White 96, Mark Leggio 92, Jose Maltos Diaz at 91, Liram Haralahu 90, Sergio's 88, Lewis Ward is 79. So basically, you have six of the nine kickers in the league are 80%. And then you have three guys that aren't. Like, it's just...
And the two guys that aren't are still way ahead of the guy who's in ninth.
That's it. Yeah. Vincent Blanchard is 75. Rene Paredes, who I feel like is almost very similar to Brett Lowther.
Yeah.
Like locker room
historically,
guy.
Yeah, and historically far better. Like, Brett's always kind of been all over the place, to be fair.
Yeah, right.
His numbers kind of have historically ended up okay, but it's never been kind of a straight line to get there. So,
well, and he's not like Sean White, who Sean White is just, you know, Mr. Automatic. Like,
until about November, but yes.
Yeah.
Unless the BC Lions are playing at home.
Well, not like our boy Sergio, who just kicks nukes all the time and misses the occasional one, right? Like, we're talking he's missing makeable kicks, and... Yeah. To me, I think this three-game stretch is a nice preview, right? You're playing in three really big games.
Yeah.
You're playing in a real test of your character against Calgary. You're playing in Labor Day Banjo Bowl, right? To me, if he's still at 60-ish percent after those three games, no matter the vibes, no matter how well-liked he is, he's got to go to six-game island. And you got to find a way to bring somebody else in. Like, the fact that they are winning games in spite of their kicker, not because
that's the most remarkable thing, is for how bad this has been, it hasn't really cost them a game. He missed, I believe, a couple in the loss to Calgary, but they lost by more than six. So, I mean, he contributed to the loss, but they still would have lost even if he made those kicks.
And they played like dog shit. And the fact that I know Mace is out there, well, it's the wind why we went for two. That's showing me that a coach is going, okay, I know my guy, you know, I might not be able to trust him, so might be time to do something else. So to me, if Lowther is still dog water after this, you gotta bring in competition. I don't care the vibes. He's a grown-ass man. He's got to know he's not good enough, right? Like, I'm not saying don't pay the man. I'm not saying cut him. But six-game island sounds pretty fair.
Yeah, I mean, probably. I think at that point, a decision will have to be made. But I also understand where Corey Mace is coming from. And like, who knows what's actually going on behind closed doors, but I appreciate Corey Mace coming out publicly and supporting his guy.
Of course.
You don't want Ryan Dinwiddie, you don't want your coach coming out here and like slamming you every time you have a bad football game. It's just not good for that player, and it's not good for the entire locker room, obviously. So I didn't expect Corey Mace to say anything else. I'm glad he's still out there supporting his guys.
Of course.
But yeah, that's going to have to be a decision that hopefully won't have to be made. Hopefully over the next three games, Brett Lowther, you know, things correct themselves and he starts to be more himself. But we'll see. Yeah, if he's not, then something will have to give. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
It's funny that like, and it sticks out like a sore thumb how bad he is because how good the rest of the team has been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Saskatoon fans got some good news this week.
I love this. I absolutely love this.
As we learned, the Saskatchewan Roughriders will be playing their 2026 home preseason game in Saskatoon. How? Because, well, I mean, isn't that normally part of the season ticket package? Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. But not in 2026.
Thanks to
the Toronto Argonauts, who took the cheap and lazy way out. As you may know, in 2026, that something called the FIFA World Cup is coming to North America, and that includes Canada, and it will be played in Toronto and BC. So that means the Argos will be kicked out of BMO Field for, I believe, over a month. So there'll be some games that they will not be able to play at BMO Field, obviously.
Right.
The BC Lions will also face similar circumstances at BC Place. Unsurprisingly, because their owner gives a shit, they've decided that they have not announced plans yet, but expect to see some games in various locations around BC.
Absolutely love that as well.
Mm-hmm. The Toronto Argonauts, on the other hand, decided they will play quote-unquote home games in the following cities. Winnipeg, Manitoba. Regina, Saskatchewan. And Hamilton, Ontario.
What do those teams have in common, Gas?
At least two of the three top fan bases, if not three of the top three.
Huh. That will pay for an extra regular season game and will thoroughly enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Huh. Yeah.
So,
ooh, take the money and run.
Yeah, that's basically what MLSC has decided to do. We don't know how the exact financial arrangement of all of this is working, but it is obviously the path that the Argos have chosen. It's ridiculous. I don't agree with it at all. I think it's a slap in the face to your fans.
100%.
I know some people will say, well, at least the Hamilton game is close. It is, but they're also your biggest rival, so I don't think you should be playing a home game in their stadium against them.
Especially when there's so many university facilities around that could fit an Argo-sized crowd.
Yeah, you don't even have to really expand many of them that much, if at all.
No.
Just move it around. Like, we've talked about London possibly being a market in this league. Go play a game in London. And, like, you know, Luke Wilson's apparently on board of playing a game in Windsor. Like, right. What are we doing here? Like, right. This is a rare opportunity the Argos had to grow the CFL brand in Southern Ontario, and instead they're just gonna
do it
the easiest, cheapest, most moneyest making way.
And that leads to the Saskatchewan Roughriders getting to do something which is super cool.
Yeah, so they decided then, okay, well, we are going to include this road game against the Argos in the season ticket package for next season. So that means,
and if I'm a season ticket holder, I'd rather see another regular season game than a preseason game.
Absolutely. So that means 10 regular season games plus the playoffs next year for everyone who has season tickets, which is great. So what are they going to do with the preseason game? Well, they decided to take that opportunity and they're going to play this game in Saskatoon, which is also great. I'm sure it works out logistically for them too. I'm going to assume that's going to be their first preseason game of the year. So then it's camps all in Saskatoon and that game's all in Saskatoon and they don't have to go anywhere.
No. So again, it's like they can win by bringing professional football right here to Saskatoon, which is great. Griffith Stadium, bunch of renovations.
It's been what, since 1991? Last time there was a game up there? Yeah.
Which is insane, right? Like, I understand the business side of why you wouldn't do it in a regular year. I get that. Right?
Like, I mean, you would have to, like, you say you could do it. It's like, well, then you're figuring out, then you're probably having, I don't know, 75-80%, maybe even more of your season ticket base opt out of that game, and then you're not making as much money off season tickets that year. So they're not going to do that, right? In a normal year.
So business-wise, it makes sense to not do it. But like, for the Riders to recognize this unique opportunity and go, hey, we've got a chance to do something pretty cool here. And I love it. Their Griffiths under the lights with some of the new turf is just, it's a great place to watch a football game. It's really cool. Like, I'm looking forward to attending it. I don't know what tickets are going to be, but I know I'm really looking forward to not having to drive 2-ish hours to watch professional football. And that to me is awesome. It is probably a $20 Uber ride from my house, which is also awesome in case my kids don't want to go.
Yeah, I mean, it is still preseason football at the end of the day, so professional is a stretch.
it's somewhat beyond U Sports or the CJFL, right? Like, it's mostly guys getting their jersey to wear to hang up in their office when they're a successful car salesman or insurance broker down the road, but it's still pro football.
I suppose, yeah. But yeah, obviously this is a great decision, a smart decision. It makes sense on every level. I don't think anyone would have blamed the Riders if they still just played their home preseason game at home to try to maximize profits off that.
Well, didn't they do that with Ottawa one year?
Technically, the one game was also an Ottawa home game.
Yes. Right.
So technically, one of them was the Red Blacks home game because TD Place wasn't ready yet. In a preseason game scenario, I'm not really going to mock them for that.
No, God, no,
not at all. So yeah, that was that weird scenario where I remember covering that game for CJME at the time, and it was very strange because like the Red Blacks very much treated as a home team. Like Big Joe was there, the graphics, like everything was like Red Blacks, and it's like, but we're at Taylor Field, and there's a Rider logo over there, but okay.
and the rainbow seats, like, come on, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, but I mean, hey, you got to do what you got to do sometimes, and you got to make it work, I guess.
Got to bring Big Joe sometimes.